Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Traverse in the Stars podcast.
Hello, Miss Yuhindu Gingala. Thank you so much for coming to the Traverse in the Stars podcast.
Thank you for having me, Jeff.
Totally my pleasure. So I always start off with a question of inspiration. So what inspired you to become an actor, and who were your earliest influences?
Well, I started becoming interested in acting when I was a kid. I don't remember not ever being interested in acting, actually. My parents used to watch a lot of films in front of me, like a lot of films that were meant for adults on the movie network. And so I just watch with them and I empathize with the characters and then like wonder why, because I was so young. Like I knew then, I'm like, I've never lived your life, but why do I feel the pain that you're feeling? One of the movies that evoked like a lot of emotion from me was Waiting to Exhale with Angela Bassett in her monologue when she was playing Bernadine. And in her monologue, she was talking about like her husband cheating on her and leaving her. And she's going on and on about how a sham of the marriage it was. And I was resonating with her. I'm like, yeah, girl, you're right. But I was so young. So I'm like, how did she do that? So I was interested in that process.
So when you do rehearsals and auditions and whatnot, sometimes they ask you to do a monologue. Have you ever done the Waiting to Exhale monologue as one of your auditions?
Not in my auditions or rehearsals, but I remember in grade 12, like one of our last assignments, we had to choose monologues that weren't given to us by the teachers, and I chose that one.
Oh, very cool. It's nice how these things connect over time.
No. I did have a little bit more life experience, but not to that degree. There were other points in my life that I could connect it to, which made it work.
Mm. So I always do some research on my guests, and I read a quote of yours where you stated you were born into a family of storytellers. So what does this mean to you? And what did this teach you about the power of stories?
Well, my parents, even though they're not artists, to me, they're creators. They created my name. So my name comes from my maternal grandmother's name and my paternal grandmother's name, Marie, Louise, and Bernadette. And when you take the first few letters of each name, you get Malibé. So that in itself is a creation, and I think it's magnificent. And I love to carry their legacy with me wherever I go. So that's cool. But also in my family, when I lead by storytellers, is that we express ourselves orally. So when we're telling stories, it's very animated, as if we're in the story. So that's what I mean by storytellers. It's like, it's in our blood.
That's very cool. And I also really love the idea of the importance put on your name. Because names are so important, I think, to who we are and to connecting us to who our ancestors were as well. So in thinking about you and your name and how it was created, how does this connect you to your ancestry, and how does it help define who you've become?
Well, I've only met my maternal grandmother. I haven't met my paternal grandmother yet. She lives in Congo. But my grandmother became blind in the 1970s and was blind up until her death in 2019. She was a very independent woman. Being blind, she did a lot of things on her own, things that we weren't even aware about until her death. And we were like, how on earth did you manage? You never went anywhere by yourself. She was just a woman of many, many talents. And she was a kind, gentle woman but with a fighting spirit. And that's part of me. Like I see a lot of myself in her. So that's why we got along really, really well. Like I consider her like one of my very first loves. And when she passed, it was extremely heartbreaking. But she's just an example to me of someone who, like, life, you know, life gave her a terrible bad, but she made the best out of it. She was the woman who would gather family together. She had impeccable fashion sense, but she was blind. So she would, like, when we'd go into stores, she would feel the fabric and be like, oh, no, not this. Oh, no, I love this. Not this. Oh, I'll have this. She'd have, like, the best parka. And I'm like, how do you do this? I can see, and your parka looks better.
So learning from that, obviously you've chosen for yourself a very difficult profession. I mean, it's, let's face it, you could have done something easy, but instead you did something extremely competitive. I'm sure there's ups, I'm sure there's downs. So how did knowing your grandmother and what she's able to overcome and go through help you overcome this really difficult profession that you chose?
Well, listen, you know, as soon as I realized I wanted to be an actor, I told people, and then everyone thought I was nuts. And I am a little nuts. But listen, I'm really good at my job. I'm not good at much else. I'm really good at this. This is why I have to do this, because I don't know what else I would do.
That's how you know you chose correctly, because you're not good at anything else.
Not good at anything else. I don't see myself doing anything else. I'm really good at this. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is, and there were moments too where I thought to myself, okay, this would just be a hobby. But then something would pull me in, a film or a television show or a play or like an audition notice. And I'd be like, no, I have to get back into this. It's calling me. It's meant for me. And my grandmother, like when she was in town, she would come to my shows and hear my shows. And my grandmother only spoke French. She would come see my English shows just for support. And I remember the year before she died, I went to visit her. She was living in Ottawa. And I asked her, I was curious. I'm like, Grandma, do you have any idea what I do for a living? Because she's never seen me.
Yeah.
Like, what do I do? And she's like, well, yeah, you pretend to be other people on TV and on stage. I'm like, so you know?
That's awesome.
She knows. And actually, like, before she died, she's like, she just kept saying, keep at it, keep going. Keep going on your path. You're doing great. I believe in you. During those moments of doubt, listen, I had my grandmother and I had other family members around me and friends who, because of the life path that they chose, and they were very diligent with it and focused with it, that helped me to focus too. Right? Like, this type of career is the type of, not that in any other career you, it's less than 100%. In some
right.
example. But with this one, it's like, it's a lifestyle, right? And so one of the things that I overcame was being like, okay, well, if I want this as a career, then it has to be a lifestyle. And that, like, sheds the doubt away. It kind of normalizes my career.
So when you finally decided to take this leap of faith into the world of acting and filmmaking, how did you hone your skills to become a strong actor? Where did you go, and where did the confidence come from to finally decide this is what's going to happen?
Well, I did. I was in all of my high school plays from the 9th grade to the 12th grade, and after that, I joined the Soul Pepper Youth Program, and I did the Be Current Raisin Ensemble, and both of them were just rigorous theater programs where we focused on skill, focused on studying different playwrights. Something that really, really helped me in those programs were discipline and consistency. So just being on all the time and making sure that I led a healthy lifestyle, making sure that I was alert, making sure that, you know, I knew my scene analysis and everything. So just immersing myself into that world right away, right after high school, really helped me own my skills.
I mean, did you think about like a backup plan you were going to do in case it didn't work? Or was it, I'm doing this, I went to the school, all in, you know, in the casino, this is happening?
No, no. So I had a backup plan-ish. I went to York for political sciences and communication. And while I did that, I was in like 2 theater programs.
Very smart.
the most for a long period of time. And even after I graduated, I was just, oh yeah. And after I graduated, I got a permanent job somewhere. And within like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I was like, yeah, I can't do this. This ain't it. It's going to be a life of art for me.
So I read, as a member of the Grays Project Collective, you shared a story about being bullied in eighth grade. The story earned you awards for outstanding ensemble and outstanding production. So how did this experience teach you the importance of drawing inspiration from your life in your art?
We were nominated, actually, for two doors. And that was a moment, that was a very pivotal moment in my career, because that's when I realized that I had all the tools I needed to be as authentic as possible. Right, career. You know, there's a lot of, especially when you're young, it's like you have to be this way. Especially when you're a young woman, you have to look a certain way, be a certain way. And I always loved to write. And that story of me being bullied is something that I needed to get off of my chest.
Mm.
At that point in time, I was like, I'm ready to release this. I'm ready to let it go. And so actually before we performed it, like I'd written it, got into the play, audition, got in, and then told my mother, oh, by the way, I was bullied in the eighth grade. So that was pretty tough, but that was my way of transmuting pain into art. And that's when I understood that, yeah, there are artists that do that. They use their pain for art. I understood that in different ways and watching movies, but I'd never done that for myself until that point. And so that's when I knew, I'm like, yeah, I can actually use myself in different roles, and that's enough.
Mm. Well, as someone who was bullied a lot growing up, I totally understand the importance of that. I was bullied right through high school, so I know what it's like. One interesting thing is, though, as you know, as someone who tells that story about being bullied, and becoming an actor, is a lot of it has to do with vulnerability. Where does the courage come from to allow yourself to be that vulnerable in front of strangers?
That is a good question. You know, I will tell you one thing. It was easier to reenact the scenes in front of strangers than it was in front of my parents. And so the fact that they were strangers or like distant colleagues was totally fine, because they didn't know me that well. But the night that my parents came to watch the show, I spotted my mom while I was doing my monologue and started crying. Never cried.
Oh, wow.
In performances, except for when she came. And then my tears carried on to the next scene, but I wasn't supposed to cry for the next scene. Bawling. The courage comes from not knowing the people in the crowd, but also knowing that the story will serve people in the crowd. And it'll be like their answer. Be like, oh, I went through that too, and that's how I felt. I feel seen. I feel important. Maybe it's time for me to share my story with the ones that I love and not feel ashamed for being picked on.
Did that give you a sense of how empathy works in performance?
Absolutely. That answered my question that I had when I was a kid. I was like, oh, that's how you did what you did. Women that went through what Bernadine went through will be like, oh, I feel seen, I feel important, and I understand her journey. And I understand her thought process too, right? Because, you know, we watch characters and sometimes they do things that we don't necessarily like. And we're like, oh, that's kind of nasty. But when you're not judging and you're seeing their internal process, you're like, oh, well, they did this because of that. And this is a very human thing to do. So, for example, in the piece where I was bullied, I said I was reenacting when I was getting ready for my graduation party, and my mom was calling me downstairs, and I was quickly getting ready and taking the clothes off of me that were dirtied by the people in my class that were bullying me. So it was essentially me hiding the fact that I was being bullied, right? And so, again, that's a human thing to do. I could have told my mom at that moment. You know, older me would think, hey, why didn't you tell mom? I was so ashamed there as a 13-year-old. I'm like, oh my gosh, I was bullied for absolutely no reason whatsoever. But again, it's a very human thing and a human reaction to be like, okay, I feel ashamed. This is what I'm going to do. And someone else watching it may be like, yeah, I used to feel shame, or I feel ashamed, and that's why I did this, this, and that. Doesn't mean it's necessarily right, but it's just understanding where the person's coming from and why they're doing what they're doing.
So when you take on a new role, okay?
Yeah.
Are you looking to figure out that character's drama, or let's say wherever their pain is coming from or whatever? Or are you accessing your own and using that to access the character?
It depends on the character. It solely depends on the character, because there are certain, like I can relate myself to every character I've ever acted, but some are just so different from me that I have to remove some parts of myself to completely transform up. So what I do is I ask myself questions. So if it's a character on paper that seems very different from me, I'll ask myself questions like, why did they do this? Let's look at how they grew up. Let's look at their occupation. Let's look at the circumstances they're in. And the deeper I get, the richer their life becomes. And then, like, I can resonate with the reasons why they do what they do. And sometimes the characters that seem so different from me, like on the surface, are actually quite similar to me towards the end, like when I do that deep, deep work.
Mm. So as a storyteller, obviously from a family of storytellers, how do you develop the story of your character? Is it always what's just on the page, or are you developing backstory that may not exist on the page for your character to access, you know, those feelings better?
I'm definitely developing a backstory because it just makes the experience on screen more rich. If I have a story for how you and I met, or if I have a story as to why we're here, or if I have a story about our relationship, then it makes how I address you different. It just colors everything, right? It gives different hues to the scene. So I develop backstory. Sometimes I can go as far as, yeah, we met when we were 5, or depending on the relationship dynamic, like if I'm a mother or a sister, like it's just, there's so many levels to it. For me, I think it's important to have a backstory. And what I usually do is, like, I carry notes. One of my acting coaches, Suzanne Bastien, taught me this, to write like certain notes about what's going on in the scene, like only secrets that I have, and bring them with me on set. And right before I film the scene, like, I read that little snippet to myself, and then I go and record the scene. So that way I have that in mind, which colors the scene that I'm in. So it's always, for me, it's always richer to do a backstory. But,
so as an accomplished writer, are you thinking about writing more for screen, film, and television?
Absolutely. I started, and then acting work picked up. So I went right back into acting and just threw myself in 100%. But yeah, writing is something that I've always been interested in my whole life. And I journal all the time. And I'm always writing scenes all the time. It's just the right moment to publish everything that I'm looking for. But I'll definitely be doing that soon.
Now, when you're approaching your character as a writer now, are you able to make connections and understand what the writer was going for in that script? That, once again, as someone who might just be a viewer like myself, I might not notice all the nuance that, oh, this is why the writer might have made this decision or that choice. As someone who is a writer, are you able to go, I see what they did right there. This was maybe an insight that somebody else would be like, I don't know, I just read it, you know?
Oh, definitely. I think they lend to itself. Acting and writing lend to themselves. So often I can read a scene and imagine it in my head. And this is how I would approach my writing. Just imagine my head and be like, okay, what does the writer want me to feel in this scene, like as the character? Mm. And also it helps to ask, what does the writer want the audience to feel in this circumstance? and I catch a lot of things. But that just comes from years and years of study. But yes, I can, especially like within the style of the writing, especially if I know the writer and I've seen the writer's previous works, I'm like, okay, well, this is your genre, this is your tone. So right. I know what you're going for here, and I know what to look for, especially when I know the genre. So yes. So I guess your question is, yes, there are things that I could pick up that a non-writer would overlook. But then again, I don't know what a non-writer would overlook. I see it all.
As someone who's a good writer, do you, I'm sure every actor has been in a TV or film where the writing wasn't good, without saying which ones they were, are you, does it make it a little harder to be like, oh, I want to change this piece of dialogue. Oh, I would change this scene.
I will say it bluntly. I've had those moments. Listen, I'm not here to lie. I've had those moments where I'm like, this character would not say that clearly. But here we go.
Did you just like grab a pen and be like, let me fix this for you?
No, because like I've been in a situation where I was like, no, this character wouldn't say this based on how she grew up, based on the dynamic that they have with this other person in the scene, this wouldn't happen. And the director was very adamant that it would have. And I said, okay, well, but I'll say it with 100% commitment because that's my job.
Right.
Right, but that it only happened maybe once in my life. Just once where I was like, ah! But usually everyone's on point.
That's good. So you now star in 5 Days at Memorial, which is about the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. So how do you get involved in this project and what excited you about the opportunity?
Well, I got this project through an audition. And this audition, so now we're doing self-tapes at home mostly. And this audition was through a live Zoom. So kind of like this. And there was a scheduled time for it. But I had 2 self-tapes to hand in, one before the live Zoom and one after the live Zoom. And it came in just 24 hours before. So I had just that much time to prepare and I was given 3 scenes. And I remember being like, oh, live Zoom, I'm so nervous because it's live. But I got the scenes and I was like, wow, these are well-written. I want to do this. So I prepared as much as I could. And I did the audition and I just let it go. I let it go and I lived my life. And I remember what I was doing the day I booked the role. So I booked it actually like a month or so after I did the audition. So I'd forgotten about it, out of sight, out of mind. Mm-hmm. And I was buying makeup online. I was just buying makeup. And then I went out, walked in the park. And then, because the stores were closed at that time, right? So I was just walking the park. And then came home, heard my phone ring, but I was like, yeah, I'll pick it up later. Went to the living room, checked my phone, and saw that my agent called. Now, usually when my agent calls, that means you booked something.
Ooh.
So I looked at my phone, I'm like, oh my goodness, she called. So at that moment of, what did she call about? And I called her. And she's like, yeah, congratulations. You booked Tarika Hill, 5 Days at Memorial. It was given another name at the time because they didn't want to release much information about it. And so she told me the name, she's like, the role. I'm like, Tarika Hill, which role was this again? And I check my email and I look at the audition breakdown that I got. And I was like, oh! Because it's what I wanted. Like, I really wanted this role. I'm like, oh, this is the role that I wanted. So that's essentially how I got the role. And then just got the ball rolling from there. We were filming for a few months out of the year last year.
Very cool. So when you got the part of Tarika Hill, what were you told about the character? What insights did they give you about the character?
All they told me is that she was a nurse. And that she has a friendly rapport with the nurses. That's it. That was the breakdown. And so I bought the book as soon as I found out about the role to do my research and my research on YouTube. And then we started getting scripts. And so that's how I was finding out more about my character. And we kind of got them simultaneously because we don't film them chronologically, right? We were filming different scenes, different episodes throughout the day. So I had to plot out where I was emotionally for each scene eventually.
So, when you got through, you said you did a bunch of research. Now, was Treacle Hill based on a real person, or and what kind of research did you do to prep for it?
So she's a fictional character, actually. And I found that out through reading the book as well. And then after that, I was advised that, yeah, she's in fact fictional. And I said, great, that's even better because I get to create someone that nobody knows, right? So I can bring more of me into her, which was fantastic. And I really wanted to know what it was like to be a nurse during that time and to be a nurse during my everyday, right? Because, you know, there are certain scenes in the beginning of the series where it's like they don't know that this is going to happen. So they're just being nurses. They're just being. So I just wanted that to be the groundwork. And also, like when you're entering the set, it's like you know how the story's going to go along. And I can't come working on the first scene of the first episode with all the baggage from like the fifth day of the hurricane. You know what I mean? So yeah, so what was important for me is just establishing what the life of a nurse was like and what it would have been like to hang out with my nurse friends, and what it would have been like to joke around, what it would have been like to work, what it would have been like to stay overnight, like those kinds of things, and then add on as the story developed.
Now, interesting thing about the story, I guess maybe timeliness of it. Once again, Katrina must have been a time of extreme trauma and stress for nurses, just like we just came through COVID and the nurses who had to deal with all that as well. Was that one thing that you were thinking about when you were thinking about how to handle this scene, was what nurses were going through just recently, and maybe also the impact of watching your story for maybe nurses nowadays saying, I understand what she's going through. I've just dealt with things similar.
The thing is, while we were filming, COVID was still very much present. So we had a lot of rules in place. We still don't, we barely eat together now on set, but we really weren't together. We were isolated. The only time we had our masks off was when we were filming, when it was time to roll. And so that was present in our lives already. And like vaccines were coming out during that time too. So COVID had such a strong presence with us. And some of us weren't even from Canada that were in the series. So there was like the border issues and can we go here? We can't do that. So there was so much going on politically and socially while we were filming that was very present to us as actors that we could bring to the show. So that's the first thing. And I remember thinking while we were filming that, wow, like as a nurse, doing this every day. I don't know how to deal with a hurricane. Just like if I were a nurse during COVID, I've never dealt with something like COVID before. You know, so how would I deal with that emotionally, psychologically, mentally? Like how? So there was that stress too that I thought about that everything is so new and everything is happening so quickly and people are dying quickly. And you know, I thought a lot about sacrifice and also helplessness because it's something that we've never dealt with before. So Hurricane Katrina is something that those nurses never dealt with before. COVID is something that we've never dealt with before. The pandemic and everything that came with it was something that the nurses never dealt with before. And so, yeah, those three things were all very present and all mixed together.
So you filmed it in Canada, or did you go to New Orleans?
We were filmed in Canada and New Orleans.
Okay. So how was it filming in location? But when you went to New Orleans, did that also give a sense, certain sense of realism for you? Because once again, I mean, I remember Katrina in pictures. I mean, honestly, I wasn't in New Orleans, so I didn't have to go through it. But I mean, I remember the pictures. I remember what it was like. So when you actually went to New Orleans, did it make everything feel more real, the scenes that you had?
Now, Jeff, I wish I went to New Orleans. I only stay in Canada.
Okay.
However, the hospital scenes that we did while the hurricane was going on and the hospital was a complete mess, that changed a lot for me in the work that I did as a character, because you can do so much prep offset, but when you're brought to the set and you see everything around you, it just evokes so much more emotion out of you. It's like, wow, this is really real. It just brings you in more. And it brings you in to the scene more, and it brings out a lot of things that you didn't know were inside of you, because you can't imagine the set until you see the set. Right? And it's like surrendering to that. It's a lot of surrender. There's not so much thinking once you're in the middle of it all.
So
let the work do it for you.
So because it's based on these real events, obviously, like I said, your character wasn't real, but obviously the situation was real. And unlike maybe doing something, let's say, from World War I or Civil War, something along those lines, people who were in Katrina are still alive who are going to be watching this show. So how much pressure was there to make sure you honored the stories of those who experienced it and were really in Katrina at that time?
I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves already. I don't think there was pressure put on us. I think as creators, we wanted to tell the best story we possibly could. So we did the best, like we already came in guns ablaze. Like I remember the first thing being like, we all came prepared. Wow, I'm so happy. We deeply, deeply care about this project. And so I wouldn't say that the pressure was put on us. I think we put the pressure on ourselves to bring in our A game and tell this story truthfully. Because see, here's the thing, like with something like Hurricane Katrina, if you're not close to it by any means, then you can only see it objectively through the news, through books, or through videos, right? And you can empathize for a second or a few days, and then you can go on and live your life. But when you're acting in it, it's something that it lives in you, right? It's a part of you. You're in the situation. So that, I think we all knew going in that we had to honor that. And it was easy to do that because everyone wanted to make this story as truthfully as possible.
So one of the writers and directors in the series is John Ridley. So what was the experience working with him? How did he help encourage you, and how did you help him create the best product in the series?
So first of all, I was really excited to work with him. So that's the first thing. So once I got over my nerves, I just paid attention to the kind of shots that he was doing for each of the scenes that I was in. And based on the kind of shots that he wanted, I knew what kind of performance he wanted out of us. So, of course, there was an emphasis on keeping it as real as possible and as grounded as possible. But again, with knowing the kind of shots that he was using, it was very easy to do that because the cameras were always really, really close. As actors, we were really, really close to one another. So it was as if we were having a conversation and there was a lot of intimacy. And so, yeah, it was easy to translate what was wanted from us based on the kind of shots that John had us do.
So what do you hope that the viewers learn through the experience of watching 5 Days at Memorial?
You know, I get asked this question a lot. And I have no idea what you're going to learn. I think what they'll gain is clarity. The game is clarity about the situation. Because again, when you're looking at it objectively, you don't know the details. And as an audience member, your opinion of it could be one-sided. You know? And so there's different layers of this story, especially since we get to see the internal journeys of the patients and the doctors and the nurses and everyone who's linked to Memorial Hospital during that time. And so they'll gain clarity. I don't know about relief. I don't know about relief. I know it's been a while, but it's still, we're still affected about by it this day. I hope they gain a stronger sense of empathy. You know, as humans, I know for me, like it's easy to be like, this is black and white. It's either this way or that way. And there are no gray areas, but this is a situation. Well, life, there's a lot of gray areas, first thing, but this is a situation that has a ton of gray areas. And so for me, I encourage the audience to lean into the gray areas and to place themselves there. I'm still asking myself a question. If it were me, like what would I do? I still don't know. I still don't know. But I would love the audience to ask themselves that question. Okay, if that were me, if I was a doctor or a nurse with the knowledge that I had dealing with the hurricane that I've never dealt with before, with all these tasks at hand, what would I do? And they'll see it. Tons of bangering.
And I think it's really important to have a show like Fridays Memorial, because I think a lot of us, and I think maybe as a society, we like who lived through that the time period, like we know Katrina, we remember the video of it, for a few days that they shown it, but after that it felt like it was, it gets kind of forgotten a little bit, like we kind of everyone just kind of moved on to the next thing. And I think it's good to see something displayed and try to remind people this is still part of a history. This is still something that happened. There's still people who lived through this. Don't forget these events, because this is why, these are something you can learn from, and that's something you can just be like, oh, well, let's move on to whatever the next interesting storyline is, is out right now.
I've been saying that this story is coming out at the right time, especially with everything that's going on, because we've been asked to work together as a collective to go through this together, to take the necessary precautions to ensure that we're all safe. Right? And so essentially with Hurricane Katrina, it's the same thing, working together, working as a collective to go through something we've never gone through before. And so watching this, it's kind of like, it's not a guidebook, I would say, because they're two different situations, but they're natural disasters, right? So you see a group of people working together. It's like, okay, well, in our lives today, how can we work together for the next thing, right? And how can we honor each other now, even when nothing is happening? Because life goes on every single day. We don't have to wait until there's a natural disaster and be like, oh, well, let's drop our boots and do this. Like, how can we take precautions now
Yeah, I
based on what?
agree. I'm gonna say I agree completely. It does seem like we remember each other during a tragedy. Yeah, it's like, oh shit,
Exactly.
I'm a person, and so are you. God damn it. I just remember
Heart.
that. Right. It's like normally during the day we're like, ah, fuck everybody. But every so often we're like, oh, there's something bad's going on. I do have to connect to you, don't
Yeah, it's like,
I?
and check in with your friends. Like, I feel so amazing. Like when my friends and family check on me, and I check on them, and they're like, "Oh, hey, I'm just checking in." And I'm like, "Thank you." For thinking of me, like just that,
No, exactly. Compassion is something that can actually happen all the time. It's not just when it's an emergency. So, where can our listeners and when can our listeners find 5 Days at Memorial?
So they can find it on Apple TV Plus on August 12th. That's when we premiere. And so I believe the first three episodes will premiere on August 12th. And then each week, a different episode will come on, and it's a total of eight.
Very cool. Well, I look forward to watching it, and I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. You're fantastic, and
Thank you, Jeff.
I look forward to watching it.
Thank you, Jeff. And thank you for inviting me. This was a great conversation to have.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it. So, and I'll let you know the moment it goes live.